Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, I just have a very quick book recommendation. Yes, a book recommendation on the hearing. How Music Works by David Byrne. Yes, that David Byrne.
Of course.
I listened to it over the weekend, recommended by a YouTuber, Beth Rohr. She's a singing coach who reacts to different singers, gives a lot of great singing tips. Highly recommend her channel. She mentioned it, she recommended it to me after I mentioned something in the comments of one of her videos. Really fascinating, especially if you're a musician, must read. If you're just an avid listener, definitely worth checking out. He has a very interesting perspective on music.
And so the audiobook is him reading it?
Well, no, he doesn't read the audiobook, fortunately. Oh. He reads the preface. Fortunately, he doesn't read the audiobook. Love David Byrne. He's an amazing musician. Not a good reader. Anyway, on to this week's album. Sometimes I Might Be Introvert is the fourth studio album by British rapper Little Sims. She has said that thematically the album is about being this introverted person that has all of these crazy thoughts and ideas and theories in my head, but not always feeling like I'm able to express it not through my art, if it's not through my art. Hmm. Sometimes I Might Be Introvert was released on September 3rd, 2021, by Age 101 Music and AWOL, Artists Without a Label, to Sony Thing, produced by Inflow, Jack Wobb, and Miles James, and features Little Sims on vocals, Cleo Soul, and Obung Jire. I've been practicing his name, as featured artists. Graham Godfrey on percussion, Caroline Adeyemi, Paul Baldo, Phoebe Edwards, Patrick Linton, Desirine Ramos, apologies if I'm mispronouncing any of these, and Olivia Williams and Quidus Adidas St. Patrick on vocals. There are a lot of guest vocalists on this album.
Yeah.
And Rosie Denvers on orchestral arrangements. Reminders, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at John Scotto, you'll find Sometimes I Might Be Introvert. You'll find links to Sometimes I Might Be Introvert on Spotify and Bandcamp, Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. Not on Bandcamp, unfortunately. But I did an episode about Bandcamp. Look at the one before the latest episode of Zombie Takeout.
You could take a week off.
No. Yeah. Just a brief aside, we'd planned your last week off because you needed a week off, and I decided on Wednesday night when we were recording, or after we recorded, I was going to take a week off from all of my creative stuff. I wasn't going to post any poems or covers, and then I finished a poem on Thursday, and I just recorded it and did everything for that. And little by little, it just kind of crept up on me that I had to keep putting work out. I did a cover. I did a solo podcast. Yeah. I'm a workaholic. Anyway, on to track one, Introvert. Great bombastic opening on this one. Drums, horns, a choral arrangement, everything.
It does capture the attention. No doubt about that.
And it's almost kind of pseudo-militaristic, but with the drums and this brass, but it's got this kind of soul choral arrangement. And then there's this great sudden change into the groove.
You get that whole Tusk feel, Mm-hmm. And like what Chesky did with Factor Chandelier a few years before this.
Nice use of strings, very melodic chorus. I like the way she plays with the groove in her raps. It makes me pay attention to the lyrics. Like, I found myself paying attention to the lyrics more with this than I do with most rappers.
Now, I like how she flows with this. And I like the variety of wind instruments, but I'm not sure if it really works together in this after a while.
Okay, so that kind of 70s soul thing with the rap doesn't quite work for you.
It does, but here they felt like they were almost in two different songs for some reason,
See, I liked that. Where I liked that contrast of this very, very gritty kind of hip-hop vocal with this lush, very 70s, 60s pretty arrangement.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it really... Was it supposed to go together or not, though? I couldn't understand that.
Well, I didn't make the album. I don't know.
Like, was there something echoing in any way from one to the other? You know, was there some sort of, or was it just that they were two separate things, really separate things, joining together? Like, it seemed to work in the beginning, but somewhere along the way, it was kind of like, wait, what? You know, what are they doing? Like, it kind of just fell apart, it felt like.
And it doesn't go on the entire album. This album takes a journey. And, you know, I was kind of expecting, about four or five songs in, I was kind of wondering, like, is this just going to be like a throwback thing in terms of the tracks? And no, it took a journey.
Towards the end of this one, you know, you get the whole voicemail thing, which, I don't know, it just, this
a track
felt like it went too long.
The intro doesn't have, Introvert doesn't have the voicemail on it.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, no, it does. I'm sorry. It's on a voicemail. Yeah. It's the narrator, but who would I call the narrator? But before that, I like how the strings kind of briefly fell out in the middle, bringing back the drums, and the horns in the second half kind of raises the energy. Like how it rides the groove to the outro with the voice and string stabs. The spoken outro, I loved. But I loved it because it reminded me of Electric Castle.
Oh.
The narrator on Electric Castle is very much kind of in the same vein. You know, as I mentioned in the intro, this is effectively a concept album.
Yeah.
And I like how they kind of softened up that beginning, militaristic beginning of the ending. But yeah, it's about her journey, you know, learning to deal with her introversion and kind of encouraging herself. The narrator is right. Sims.
But what didn't this end with, like, you know, it sounded like somebody leaving a voicemail and, like, whether you pick, you know, well,
no,
we
that's
would
the
if
next
you pick
track.
The phone. That is the next track.
Yeah. On to which, Woman, featuring Cleo Soul. Nice groove. Nice use of vocal fry. It's this sort of thing. Like, another great melodic chorus. Like the guitar that comes in about a third of the way. Nice sparse beginning to the last verse. Yeah, the phone call, I wasn't sure how I felt about the voicemail at the end of this one.
Because, you know, the first one, I thought the first one had gone on too long, but that explains it, that part wasn't actually a part of it.
No, it's two different songs.
The verse on this I like. It's I was starting to get worried that there wasn't going to be a chorus, so then they broke into it. So is that a kid singing, you think, or is that under the verse? Or
oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that effective?
Well, in the chorus, I think it's Cleo Soul. That's the feature.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple more other tracks that definitely have kid vocals on them, but that's Cleo Soul. I have no idea who Cleo Soul is, but she's the feature, and there's no other rapper on the song, so I'm assuming
she's a good singer, definitely.
Yeah.
Again, I felt like this one went on a little too long, and now knowing that the answer, the voicemail is a part of this one, it's much too long.
On to track three, Two Worlds Apart. Nice kind of stuttery intro, great relaxed groove. I like how this sung sample that I think is Smokey Robinson interacts with the rap.
This is my pick as for weakest non-interlude track. I just didn't... Mostly it's the beginning part. I did not like that flow in the beginning, and the rhyme seemed so forced, you know.
The repeated word, I kind of liked that.
Oh, who didn't see booty being rhymed with bougie and
I'm not talking about the rhyme. The rhymes are a little uncreative, but I'm a poet. I don't even think about criticizing rhymes because I will criticize every fucking slant rhyme I hear.
But I wasn't a fan of the repeated word, but like because it'll be drama is such a like a teenage kind of thing, you know.
I like
the rap in the middle, though.
Okay.
Now we're talking.
I was going to say the end when it speeds up. I got into that.
Yes. Yes. That I was like, okay. I mean, you still, I'm willing to give this a chance still, man. But yeah, as far as non-interlude tracks, I would say it's the weakest of them.
Track four, I Love You, I Hate You. This goes very kind of early 60s. Nice stuttery groove. Love the bass sample. The way the horns and strings kind of build in the verse does mask the vocal a little bit.
And you know what? I'm fine with that. This one really gets the attention. Especially that sample, you know. the I Love You, I Hate You sample. Yeah. I mean, it's a gimmick, but damn, it works so well.
And changing the textures a bit in the second verse was a nice touch. Mm-hmm. Love the line, trying to phase out the noise of who you hear in your head.
Oh, it transitions into those background singers with their flow reaching that crescendo over it. Yeah, this... I was like, this could be the strongest when I was like the first one, because I wasn't happy with the first three.
It was it was definitely a contender for strongest for me until a later track.
Right. Then like I was like, all right.
Track 5, Little Q Part 1 Interlude. Shortest track on, or second shortest. Just some kids singing la la la. Could be Michael Jackson, you know, with some choral stabs and then a male spoken vocal.
I'll say this now. I wish all of the interludes would just vanish.
You generally don't like shorter tracks like that.
You know, interludes serve a purpose. This one isn't as bad as some of the others. Like, I mean, this one does serve a purpose of an interlude where it is this kind of, like, little, you know, dip between everything. Yeah. Some of the later ones, though, was like, this is almost the length of a whole fucking song, man.
But this one you said, you know, you're clearly not a fan of the interlude. Same thing with Daddy's Home, Darling Violetta. I think Tull was the only one where you liked the shorter tracks.
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes it works. Daddy's Home, it was obviously just a rejected song that was putting shoehorning pieces of between things. So it's like, come on, man.
Track 6, Little Q Part 2. The kid singing and the stabs are back. It's got this nice 70s soul groove. I like how upfront the vocal is. Not as good of a melodic chorus, but I do like the way she empathizes with the guy who stabbed her. Apparently she was stabbed in the chest at some point, and she's talking about how, like, he was going through some shit.
I kind of like the melody in the chorus on this. You know, we eat from the tree of full of forbidden fruits.
Well, I'm just talking about the melody itself. The lyrics are good.
The melody too, yeah.
Like how the chorus takes over at the end. Some nice electric piano at the end. Love that.
Well, actually, like on the third listen, I picked up on the rhythm guitar at the end. That was just so cool. You know, it just goes with the chorus and the background vocals. And it was a little odd choice to end it the way they did. I think they might have just gone with an old school fade out instead, but instead of just
it's electric piano. I love hearing it whenever I can. Track 7, Germs Interlude. Has a nice kind of dreamlike opening, and then it's really just the narrator giving Sims a pep talk.
Yeah.
This is where I have the note about Electric Castle. I liked all the narrator stuff. I did also like the syncopated orchestra riff at the end of this one.
Yeah, this one definitely went on too long. For an interlude, I mean, it is longer than some actual songs. Yeah. And, at first I thought it was going to be boring, and then the choral vocalization came in, but I could live without the dialogue, definitely. There's zero need for it.
Track 8, Speed. Little change of pace on this one. Nice synth bass tone, great punchy groove. It's nice and minimalist, just drums, bass, one synth at a time, and then a vocal. It's more of more of like a conventional modern hip hop song.
Yeah, and this is, as you said, and it's in my notes too, a nice change of pace from the Broadway rap. You know, we're just, you know, straight up. This is the first time I actually feel like we've gotten some swagger from her in this, you know, and just the keys and strings really work best here, I think.
Track 9, Standing Ovation, back to the 70s on this one. The track reminds me a bit of something like from a Tarantino movie.
It reminds me of that song they do for like basketball. You know, basketball.
Yeah. Like, also has a bit of a Soul to Soul vibe for those who remember them from the 90s.
Oh. Yeah, I like the change in tempo on it though.
And the chorus was a complete left turn. It just goes dreamy with this kid vocal. Love the synth sound when the drums drop out. The part when the track all but drops out, but she keeps going at the end, gets a little ranty.
Yeah. I feel like this is the first one here that really takes us on a journey, you know, that it has the most twists and turns on it. But yeah, the fade out should have started a little earlier. It was kind of weird that, like, it's still going.
Track 10, I See You. Love the guitar harmonics in the intro. It's just a nice mellow track. I like the intimacy of the vocal sound. Not necessarily the lyrics, but just how it was recorded. It feels very up close. It's kind of interesting how the sung part interrupts the rap.
Yeah, I mean, and she's got a good flow on this for the verse, but it feels like the chorus is something we've already heard on this album. Mm-hmm.
Track 11, The Rapper That Came to Tea, interlude. This is my pick for weakest, even though it is a narrator track.
Let us have my notes. Hip Hop Days of Future Past.
Just kind of reminds me of something you'd hear in an old movie.
Yeah, this would be weakest track too. I said I hate giving an interlude weakest, but no. I was having Meatloaf flashbacks.
And the sung part at the end went on a bit too long. There's some nice harmonies though. On to track 12, Rolling Stone. Nice synth bass. This one is just almost kind of 80s. It's not at all 60s or 70s. Again, another nice change of pace. Nicely abrupt. Fairly minimal, just vocal, bass, drums, a little bit of synth. The tempo change midway through is kind of interesting.
This one dragged a little bit for me. It just, you know, reminded me a bit of Two Worlds Apart from earlier in the album.
Track 13, Protect My Energy. I have for this one New Edition vibes.
Yeah, I like this one though.
It's very, very 80s, a very early 80s.
Totally not expected. It was totally like a, wait, what?
Yeah, great synth bass, and just loved hearing all of those classic synths. It is a bit more rhythmically complex than a new edition song, but it just has that vibe to it.
I had Janet Jackson or The Jets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same era.
Yeah, well, not early 80s, but more like mid to late.
Mm-hmm. Track 14, Never Make Promises. Great harmonies, but I've on this one, the only other note I have is it's kind of Broadway, it's kind of soul, and kind of classical.
I said at least it was only a minute. I wound up skipping most of the interludes. I couldn't do repeat listens to them. It was no.
Track 15, Point and Kill, featuring Obon Jair. This is my pick for favorite.
Yeah, I'm back and forth. You know what? I think I'm going to go with this one, too. I'm making a last-minute change because, his voice is just so interesting.
I checked out some of his solo stuff tonight. Really interesting as well. We might have to review an album.
Yeah, this is like something you couldn't ignore, you know? Mm-hmm. There were a lot of tracks on this that were kind of like, this album's still going? But this one was one of them that was like, oh yeah. Uh-huh. And her voice with his, it's just a great pairing.
Yeah, great groove, love the bass part, love his voice, love how they pair, their voices pair perfectly. Mm-hmm. Even though he's singing, she's rapping, but they almost harmonize.
Definitely.
Love the harmonies that come in the second half. It gets a bit repetitive, but I'm kind of into it.
Yeah, it's very hypnotic. I mean, the way he sings the phrase point and kill is just like, wait, what? That's a human doing that? Like, it's just, it's almost, I think it was the second or third listen that I figured out, no, that's just his voice. That's how he does it. I think the only thing that left me a little flat was the solo was just kind of like you could have done a little bit more for that.
His solo stuff is kind of like a proggier version of Seal.
Oh, God. That sounds great.
Yeah. at least from the little I heard tonight, I'm intrigued. Track 16, Fear No Man. Love the sort of party atmosphere of the track. It's very African influenced.
This is my original pick for strongest because this just, that bass, holy Jeebus.
Love the organ sound. Love the way it flows from the last track. Like, this is a case where I didn't know they'd change tracks.
Yeah.
Like, I was putting a note down about the organ and, like, the party atmosphere, and I'm like, wait, it's a different song?
Yeah. Yeah, this is where, it really worked, the flow of the album itself.
Love the mix of the organ and what I'm going to call the chanting, the background vocals. Kind of sung, kind of chanted. Track 17, The Garden Interlude. The beginning of the track kind of sounds like something off of Actor or Days of Future Past.
Yeah, it's Cold-Hearted Orb.
Yeah, exactly. I was definitely thinking Days of Future Past.
If you want to hear hip-hop with the Moody Blues, though, check out the Goody Mob song White Power, where they actually sample Question.
Huh. Interesting. This is just the narrator coming back to advise Sims. There's some great harmonies in the second half. Track 18, How Did You Get Here? Kind of the triumphant climax of the album. Nice mellow piano part in the beginning, some great harmonies, bringing back sort of that old school soul.
It's a bit Rentish, though, to me. the frame of it, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
570,000.
Nice sparse beginning, just the vocal and piano. Nice groove when the drums and bass come in. Yeah, it is a bit Rentish, but I kind of like the stuff from Rent.
I like when the drums kick in on this one. It's not a climax, this song, but this really should have ended the album, honestly.
That's why I say climax.
It is a good way to end it.
Then we have track 19, finally, Misunderstood, two words. Great kick sound, great groove, nice melody on the piano. This is kind of the denouement, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good flow and everything, but it just needed some more variation to it, you know? Because after a while, keeping in that same pocket, it just became monotone almost.
This album was on like every best list I checked had this in like their top five of last year. It was an incredibly well respected album. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff attempted here, but I think we could easily shave off a good 20 minutes. And then even if you did that, there's still about 15 minutes of, well, that's all right. So you got like half a good album here, so I'm gonna pass.
I like it. It's very, very long. It's 1 hour 5, but it really goes on a journey, so I do recommend it.
It's why we don't do CD-length albums anymore, really. And I think interlude is a euphemism for filler.
Now, when you saw how long the album was, you kind of panicked me over Facebook, and you mentioned, like, CD lengths.
Yeah.
You know they don't think about CDs anymore, right?
No, they don't. So why would they make a CD-length album?
Fair point.
We're free from the media. You can do whatever the fuck you want to do. But to come back with this, it's why, you know, my theory is, it's why most of the 90s albums were not good. Because they were just, we don't need an editor. We can put everything on here now. There's no, you know, 70 minutes we got to play with. You can do whatever you want. And I don't know. There was a lot she wanted to add on here. And there was no need for a lot of this. There's some great stuff, though, that I'd come back to listen to, but just not the entire album.
I think the 90s were just, we were coming out of the 80s that were such an iconic decade. The 90s were just kind of a scramble to kind of figure out what they were. Kind of like a lot of the 70s was just kind of a scramble to come out of the late 60s.
Well, it was having the new medium, like that new CD.
That was a factor as well, sure.
And then now it's, you know, about streaming and what to do with that.
But I think just media in general, like I noticed when I was watching Insurrection, it felt 90s.
Oh yeah, totally.
And the fact that things can feel 90s to me now, and music does as well in a lot of cases, it's just kind of weird that that decade has a signature to me now. And it's not good in general in terms of media. Like, yeah. When a movie feels 90s, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, too much of a tangent there. That's it for Sometimes I Might Be Introvert. By the way, the title is a backronym of her nickname, Simbi. I didn't even try to pronounce her full name. She's Yoruban, I think. British Yoruban. Very difficult to pronounce name. I didn't even want to try it. So Simbi is her nickname, hence the title of the album. Anyway, until next time when we'll be reviewing Growing Up by the Linda Lindas, their debut album. Looking forward to this for so long.
Yeah.
Can't wait. If you haven't heard them, check out Linda Lindas' LA Library. This is the show that, like, made them go viral.
I've heard some of their songs on XM.
Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.